When he thought about next Saturday, he began to sweat. It would come around soon enough, his rational mind knew that, but right now it seemed so far away. 6 days, 5 hours, 10 minutes. So much time for things to go wrong, no matter how low he lay, no matter his attention to detail. But if he got through the week, then 6 days, 5 hours, 10 minutes from now, he could be on his way to unparalleled joy, his ecstasy. It was a bad habit, he knew it, but it was one he had no intention of giving up. Never mind the material goods he gained from his habit. That was not why he did it. It was the excitement. And to get there, he had to endure mundane days like today. Across from him, her eyes half closed, her hands caressing the familiar glass ball, was the most wrinkled face he had ever seen. He guessed she was in her 80s now, an age few reached where he came from. The full-length black mesh dress and her long, heavily varnished burgundy fingernails added to the theatre of the moment. Her prayer-like actions told him she was now communicating with someone who had passed to the other side. In a gargling voice that made no sense to him, she asked the ball another question. Dermot, with friends who would laugh if they saw him now, sat quietly, awaiting enlightenment, calmed by the smell of the incense that fogged the darkened room. He was 39, and so proud to call himself Irish. He was only here because he knew his mother, a true believer, would have wanted him to be. Sitting in this grubby parlour on the Blackpool seafront was a way of showing his loyalty to her. He had cut down the visits to Madame Martha, but in the aftermath of the accident, he wanted to ask this great psychic why she hadn't foreseen the motorbike that knocked down his mum as she crossed Belfast's Crumlin Road. He bottled it. He wasn't scared of much, but he was a little bit scared of Madame Martha. His mum used to say she trusted the tea leaves more than she trusted Dermot's dad, and he knew she wasn't alone in that. Dermot didn't really believe that this stooped old crone could predict his future, but as the gargling and the mumbling intensified, he was less sure of his own uncertainty. He didn't seem to get as many trips to Blackpool as before, but whenever his work took him there, today it was with a group of pensioners from Yorkshire, he always looked up Martha, and she always managed to squeeze him in for a reading. Loughlin's Coaches had gone from a small family firm to one of the biggest coach companies in the north of England in the 20-odd years he'd worked in this family concern. Their bread-and-butter business was still school trips, work outings, race days, weekends in London or at the seaside, sometimes France and Spain too. But the contract that put them into the big league was the work they had with one of the country's top-flight football clubs. Every away game, often with an overnight stay, Loughlin's would take them, and Dermot loved his work for the football club more than any other part of the business. Martha let out a few more disturbing guttural moans. Her eyes rolled, she faked a ghostly shiver, and he knew she was ready to predict his future once more. He wondered if she kept notes of their past encounters, so she made sure she was constant in her predictions. As he waited, Dermot studied the pattern on the thick velvet curtains that were blocking out the Lancashire sunshine. Then, this was a first, he was sure, she murmured, her voice croaking even more.
"Give me your hand."
Nervously, Dermot did so, sensing her disapproval of the mild nicotine stain on his first two fingers. She grasped his hand between her own white, ice-cold, bony fingers, turned it slowly to see his palm, and as her index finger ran over it, she leaned over so her nose was just inches from his lifeline. More mumbling. More silence. More mumbling. More running of that finger across his hand. He felt a shiver. This was so different to his previous visits. There had been the time she had said he would get an unexpected windfall, and when he won a premium bond prize 6 months later, his mum told him,
"You see, I told you to listen to me."
He treated her to a new fridge with the proceeds. There was the time he was going out with that girl Moira from Tralee, and Martha had said he needed to avoid big arguments, and days later he and Moira had had the mother of all rows and she was gone. There was the time he asked her as a joke who she reckoned would win the All-Ireland hurling final, and she told him the colour closest to red. and Cork only went and won it. But this was a very different Martha to the one he thought he knew. More mumbling, more gargling, more stroking of his hand, and he could feel the drops of sweat forming beneath her touch. Then she jerked up her head, stared coldly into his eyes, and said,
"The Lord said, thou shalt not steal. If you do, you will be broken into small pieces."
With that she rose with a speed and a force that belied her age. It was as if she was being levitated. As she stood, looking down on him with what he sensed was a mix of anger and scorn, that bony hand swooped down onto the table and scooped up the crumpled 10-shilling note he'd placed alongside the glass ball. Without another word, she floated angrily from the room, through the door marked M.